All right, good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos is Mem Zayin. We are Mem Vav Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. We are starting this morning with the two lines on the bottom, Shtar Ubiya. Okay, so we're talking about Zechuyos of a father that he has regarding his daughter. When his daughter is either Katana or Nara, so he has a number of Zechuyos in his daughter. And the Mishnah listed them, and the Gemara is going to give us a source for these Zechuyos. And also, later this morning, we're going to start with the Zechuyos that a husband has with his wife. And not only his Zechuyos, but his Chofos as well. So he has benefits and he has responsibilities towards his wife. So in fact, that's really the key point of our Masechta. And here, as we're almost halfway through the Masechta, so we're here. Right, we've arrived. Today's Daf Mem Zayin is going to be the beginning of the discussion regarding what exactly are the obligations that a husband has towards his wife. What are the benefits that he receives also, as far as that is concerned. At the end of today and tomorrow, we're going to be going over the reciprocity, meaning that the benefits are set up reciprocal towards the responsibilities that he has, and that's what we're going to finish up today and pick it up tomorrow. In the meantime, however, let's start with our daf today, and let's go back to the zechuyos that a father has with his daughter. So if you remember the Mishnah yesterday on Mem Vav Amud Beis, meaning you don't have to turn a page, you just simply look up on the Amud, and you'll see the Mishnah, and the Mishnah lists the number of benefits that a father has from his daughter. So I'm just going over the Mishnah. Ha'av zaka bebita b'kedusha b'kesa b'shar b'biyah. Father can marry off his daughter. And not only that, but he is going to be the recipient of the money. Meaning if the Kedushin is effected through money, through Kesef, so that's going to go to the father. Shtar and Bia just simply means that he can effect Kedushin either using Shtar and Bia as well, as avenues. Obviously the Shtar and the Bia are just simply ways to, are just vehicles in terms of creating the Kedushin. But in other words, the father can do that. And then, Zakai b'mitziyasav, v'masi adam. The father also is going to be the recipient of any of the mitzias. She finds an item, so that's going to go to the father. And Maisi Adair, her earnings are also going to go to the father as well. Again, this is all during the period of Ketana and Nara. Misha also goes on to report Vahafaras Nadal Reha. Her father can go ahead and be made for Neder. And Umekabos Kita Veinochel Peres Bechayeha. Father is going to be Mekabel the Get, as we clarified yesterday. Rashi clarified and we reported yesterday. Father's kabbalah get, he's going to be receiving these daughter's get, that's only if it's get post-erusin. Meaning if she went through both stages of marriage, erusin, nisuin, so at the point of nisuin, now she becomes an independent, and as such, it's her yad, and therefore, she's going to be mekabel the get. On the other hand, if let's say the gerushin is only post-erusin, so she's still under the jurisdiction of her father's going to be mekabel the get. The Mishnah is talking about a post-erusin gerushin. And then the Mishnah then said that as the only thing the father is not going to be receiving is the peros, meaning to say that if she has properties, she inherited properties from another source, whatever, however that worked out. So she has properties, so the properties are going to produce peros, right? What we would call dividends. So the so of those, so right, which schedule is she going to be filling out? Sorry, I'm you know, just. Having wonderful memories of doing my taxes. So whichever form it is, she gets to keep the dividends. The dividends do not go to the they don't go to the father. And that's contradistinction to the husband. Meaning when she gets married, so the husband is going to get the peres, which is what we're going to be talking about at the end of today's daf. But that's coming up later. Anyway, but the father is not receiving the dividends. Okay, good. So, and I'm going to pause here in the Mishnah, meaning because then what the Mishnah then does, it transitions to, then what about the husband? What are his benefits? And that's what the Mishnah is going to transition to. But we're pausing at this point in the Mishnah, and we're the only thing that we really litigated yesterday, we didn't litigate it, it's just a simple question of, Mina Hanimili, how do I know? So yesterday we went over really one point, and that is Kesef. When it comes to Kesef, how do I know that when the father is Mekadish's daughter, that he receives the Kesef Kedushin? So that was the question that we asked yesterday. We gave an answer yesterday. Okay, good. See yesterday's daf for that. Shtar Ubiya. Father can be Mekadish's daughter also using the vehicles of Shtar and Bia. We are continuing now in the Gemara on Mem Vav Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. Menala Namakra, Vahaisa Lisha Acher, Itke Shavais La Dade. So Vahaisa Lisha Acher, in other words, Vahaya. That's talking about her status of being a Mekudeshes. And whatever the vehicle is, so there's a hekesh between all the various forms of Kiddushin. Meaning there are three forms of Kiddushin, Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. So of the forms of Kiddushin, the Torah actually articulates two of the three. Torah mentions Shtar, the Torah mentions Bia. Torah does not explicitly mention Kesef. How do we know Kesef? So famously. So we learn it through Gzeira Shava. So the but whatever the case is, in other words, once we know the father can affect one form of Kiddushin, so then the father can affect all forms of Kiddushin. Zakeh ben Mitziasa, father now is entitled to the Mitziah of his daughter. His daughter picks up an item, finds an item, right? Wins the lottery, whatever the Mitziah is. So, that's going to go to the father. Why Mishem Eva? So the Gemara gives a very brief two-word explanation of why that is, and that is that if the father was not going to receive her Mitziahs, so that'll create animosity between father and daughter. And so what? Meaning, obviously I don't mean that. Meaning, obviously we're talking about a family relationship over here. We want the best family relationship that would be possible. I'm still going to restate my question. And so what? And so what that there's animosity between the father and the daughter? Meaning my question really is, so for concern of animosity, so therefore there's a takana chachamim that the Messiah are going to go from the daughter to the father. What is it? What were the chachamim concerned about? So over here, I'll present Rashi and I'll present Tosfos today. So Rashi says, Mishum Eva, I'm reading the top Rashi on Mem Zayin Amid Aleph. So, Dekevan de Iu Chayev Ben Mazonoseh, Yamart. Sorry, let me read it better. Dekevan de Eino Chayev Ben Mazonoseh, Yamart Mitziasa Shalai, Yika Eva Velo Zayin Lasu. Because the father, Mi Iker Adin, is not obligated to feed his daughter. Now, this is going to come out sounding a little bit rough, but I'm just giving you the facts. And that is, Min HaTorah, is the father obligated to feed his children? Meaning to go out of pocket in order to feed his children. Is there an absolute obligation for the father to do so? Min HaTorah? The answer is, up until 6 years of age. Now, that's very young. Now, why is that? Why is the father obligated to support his daughter up until 6 years of age? We're going to learn this later in the Masechta. And the reason why is because the husband is obligated to feed his wife. Up until 6 years of age, the child is viewed as just simply a connection, a subordinate to the wife. In other words, up until 6 years of age, it's tzarich le'imo. And so therefore, since the husband is obligated to support his wife, which we're going to be talking about later on, so therefore the young children also by extension is going to be, he's obligated to support as well. But after 6 years of age, may ikker hadin, according to the strict letter of the law, he's not obligated to support. Now there is a takanas usha, which also we're going to be seeing later in the Masechta. And one of the Takanas Usha, a number of institutions that were made in Usha, meaning when the basin was sent to Usha as part of the Galus. But the one of the institutions that was made in Usha is that the husband is going to be supporting his daughters until their bas mitzvah. We'll talk about that later in the Masechta. But the point that we're making right now, says Rashi, is that if all of her mitzvahs are going to go to the father, so the father now is going to be much more receptive to go ahead and to support his daughter, even when he's not obligated to do so. Okay, so that's Rashi's presentation of the Gemara. Tosfos gives a different understanding. Tosfos over here, I'm looking at the long Tosfos, first one on the Amud, and we're just I'm just taking a selection of the Tosfos. Ulari nira eva de mitziasa haynu shalika shenel manuva mukashchem. Father, obviously, at this point of either while she's a katana or while she's a nara, has the right to marry her off to whomever he wants, whomever he deems fit. So therefore, if he is going to be receiving the her mitzias, it'll soften him in terms of making sure that he will be marrying off to the best possible candidate. Okay, and I know it's not a very uplifting way to look at a father, meaning you would think that the father in of itself would be motivated, guided to go ahead and marry his daughter off to the best candidate. But, okay, it's the real world and we're looking at real people over here. And so, if the father's receiving the Messias, it'll definitely soften him even more. That's Tosfos' understanding. Anyway, we're back to the Gemara Maisei Adah, the earnings go to the father. Again, all the zchuyos of the daughter to the father. So we just went over Messias. That's a takana because of Eva. Two different pshatim in terms of what Eva, why it is that we're concerned about Eva. We're moving on. How do I know that the earnings go to the father? So if the father can settle off as being a maidservant, so that means to say that obviously her earnings are going to go now to her new master. So that means to say if the father's selling it, that's something that the father himself owns, and therefore the father is owning those earnings. So the Gemara asks a really sharp question. Yes, he could sell his daughter into becoming an Amma, but that's only while she's a Katana. He can't sell her while she's a Nara. So why can't we make the argument that his rights to the earnings will end at the point of when she becomes a Nara? Meanwhile, what our Mishnah taught us is that he is entitled to the earnings while she's a Katana and while she's a Nara. But if the whole source is his ability to sell her into becoming an Amma, well, that only goes until when she's a Nara, not during her stage of Nairus. So if this is a source, so then the earnings should be cut off once she becomes a Naira. So the Gemara says, no, Mistabra Davia Hava, Di Isa Gadacha Maisi Adel, Lav Davia Elaha, Dezakala Rechman Laav, Lemimser Luchupa, Hechematzi, Masala, Ha Kamevatalemi Maisi Adel. So the Gemara tries to make the following argument. No. His rights to her earnings will continue into the point of Naira. Why? How do I know that? Because what can he do while she's a Naira? He can marry her off. Now, when he marries her off, so the day of the marriage, can she go to work that day? No, he can't. She can't go to work that day. She's going to have to call in with a very simple explanation. I can't come to work today. I'm getting married today. And so I know this is an interesting argument. And since the father, I'll get to your point. Your point's excellent. So since the father has the right and ability to take her away from work, in other words, because we have already established that the father can marry her off while she's a Nara, since he could take her off from work, so that shows an ownership that he has over her Maisei Adayim, and therefore he has the rights of Maisei Adayim even while she's a Nara. Now, it's interesting that the Gemara says that he could take her off for a day. Alan points out, I was thinking the same thing myself, is that he really has to, he's taking her off for a week. In other words, we know that during Sheva Brachos, so the husband's not allowed to go to work during Sheva Brachos. And presumably, she's also not allowed to go to work as well. So it's certainly interesting that the Gemara is focusing on the day of marriage and not the week of Sheva Brachos. That's certainly interesting. But this is the Gemara's argument. The Gemara is not going to love this argument at all. So Paruch Rav Achai. So Rav Achai asks a number of questions. First of all, how do you know that the father could just simply take her off of work for the marriage? Meaning maybe, yes, it's true, he could prevent her from going to work, but maybe she can expense it. And maybe she's going to get a reimbursement from the father for that day that she's taken off to get married. That's number one. Additional to that, you know what? Maybe they can make the chasta at night. Nobody's working at night. So maybe he can make the chasta at night. She won't have to miss a day of work. Maybe she can get married on Shabbos and Yantiv. Nobody's working on Shabbos and Yantiv. So in other words, so you have not successfully argued to me why it is that the husband is entitled to her earnings just because he can marry her. There are a number of circumstances in which he can marry her and she won't be missing any work, or alternatively, she'll be reimbursed for that day that she's going to be missing. That last suggestion of the Gemara should certainly raise your eyebrow, right? And Rav Achai says he can marry her off on Shabbos and on Yontif. Really? He can marry her off on Shabbos and Yontif? We all remember the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that the Mishnah is Zimnoi Katan. You are not allowed to get married on Shabbos and on Yantiv, right? Really, the Gemara is focusing over there on Yantiv and even on Chol HaMoed, Marv, and Simcha B'Simcha. Okay, but anyway, so our Gemara's suggestion over here that you can just simply get married on Shabbos and Yantiv, and those are non-work days. So how exactly do you understand our Gemara over here in light of the fact that you're not allowed to get married on Yantiv? Okay, Tosos raises that question. Tosos gives answers. It's a really interesting Tosos. I highly recommend it. Recommend every Tosfos, but this one over here is suggesting that maybe we're talking about during Tosefes Shabbos and Tosefes Yom Tov. It's a really interesting Tosfos. Meanwhile, we're just going to go on. But the point of the Gemara, the larger point of the Gemara is that she doesn't have to miss work for her wedding. So, Ela Ketana Lo Tzricha Kra. Hashta Zivuni Mezavin La Masi Adami Baye. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what we're going to argue. And that is that the fact that the father's entitled to her earnings when she's a Ketana, I don't need a pasuk for that. If he could sell her into servitude, so I don't need a source now to tell me that he's going to be collecting the earnings. Meaning the whole idea of, if he can sell her, of course he's entitled to the earnings. So I don't need a drasha, I don't need a pasuk for that. So Eliki, it's their krala nara. So now that we have a drasha, so the drasha now is there to teach us a chiddush. What's the chiddush? Nara. Oh, okay, fine. Because by Nara, he no longer can sell her, and yet he's still going to be entitled to the earnings. Okay, fine. So basically, how do I know that the father's entitled to the earnings? It's a drasha. But what we spent just the last couple of minutes doing is trying to understand the mechanics of the drasha. But when all said and done, it's a drasha. How far is Nedarim? Okay, a point that we've already gone over numerous times in the Masechta, and that is that we have a pasuk in Parshas Matos that says that the father can be mefer his daughter's Nedarim. She makes a vow. He can annul the vow, and it's a pasuk in Chumash. Okay. How do I know that the father's mekabel again? Again, we have a drasha. Over here, it's a hekesh in the pasuk of marriage. There's also the pasuk of divorce. In other words, both are put into the same pasuk in Parshas Kisetze. And just like we've already established, they can marry her. So he accepts a get for her again while she's in Arusa. Okay, and now we're up to the dividends. So, is the father receiving the dividends? Our Mishnah says no. Father's not receiving dividends. So what happens to her dividends? It's called the trust fund. Okay, it's not a modern invention, right? The trust funds, the Gemara describes it as a segula, right? That's the term used in the Gemara to describe a trust fund. So over here, if whatever, she has assets, she has properties, and it's producing fruit, or let's call it dividends. So the dividends are just simply going to get reinvested, and it's going to be hers, and the father's not getting it. So the Gemara now is going to have a discussion regarding the dividends. So Tanu Rabbanan, Ha'avin Ochal Peres Bechayibito, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Hav Ochal Peres Bechayibito. And what comes out now is it's a Machlokas Tanayim. Our Mishnah very clearly says that the father's not going to get dividends. And meanwhile, the Brisa brings down it's a Machlokas. So Bemaike Mefluki Tanakamas Avar Bishlam Abal Takin Le Rabbanan Pered Imkein Mimne V'lo Parik. So look, the Gemara says like this. According to the Tanakama, husband's going to get dividends. That's where we're finishing our daf today, discussing the husband and his ability to receive the dividends, his rights to receiving the dividends. So when a woman gets married, so her properties are hers, yet any of the pairs that come off the properties go to the husband, and that's called peros, and the husband does get them. Why? So as we're going to learn at the end of today's daf. So that is for his obligation to redeem her, to ransom her. Meaning that in the event that his wife is taken captive, so now the husband's going to go ahead and he is obligated, right? Obviously, you would like to think that he would want to, but that's fine. But we're now talking, we're in Ksuvus right now, we're talking about his legal obligation. He is obligated to ransom her, I was going to say raise the money. Hopefully he already has the money, but in other words, to take his own money out of pocket and to go ahead and to ransom her. And that is reciprocity for the peiros that he receives. We're going to be discussing this later on. So when it comes to the husband, so the peiros now are going to go to the husband and creating now that legal obligation now that he must ransom her. So but the father, you think your daughter's taken into captivity. You don't think the father's going to ransom her? And the father needs to be monetarily incentivized in order to go ahead and to ransom his daughter. Of course, he's going to do it notwithstanding. So the father does not need the motivation, the financial incentive. And that's the Shita, the Tanakama. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Savar, Avnami, Mim Nevel Parik, Savar Kisa Nikita, Ilave Tezo, Vitifrak Nafsha. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that, no, the father also needs a financial incentive as well. Why? Because if, in fact, according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, the daughter is going to be keeping all of her dividends, so the father's going to say the following: look, it's really unfortunate that my daughter was taken into captivity, and yes, in other words, I'd like to see her get out. But in terms of the money, so look, she's right; she has a trust fund, and all those dividends that she's been collecting all those years, let her use those in order to redeem herself. And I understand it's not a flattering way to look at the father, but Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda says it. But if in fact she keeps her dividends, so the father is gonna his pockets are gonna be a little bit tight. I'm not gonna take the money out of my pocket. She has her trust fund. She has all those dividends she's been collecting. Let her redeem herself. Okay. So therefore, according to Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, so have the dividends go to the father. It will soften him, incentivize him to redeem his daughter if necessary. Okay, so, do the peiros go to the father? We learned in the Mishnah, no. We just learned in the Braisa, it's a machlokas. I assume we follow, like our Mishnah, the dividends do not go to the father. Nisei, yeser, yeser, alav, abal, shu, ocha, v'chulei. Okay, and here we begin. Okay, so this is now where we make the big turn in the Masechta, right in the middle of Mem Zayin and Mem Aleph. I know it's a funny place. We're not at a Mishnah. We're just simply at a juncture in the Gemara. But what we're doing is that we're moving in our Mishnah from the Zichuyos that the father has in his daughter, and now we're moving into the part of the Mishnah of the husband's Zichuyos in his wife. And so here we are now going to be taking the big turn in the Masechta. These are now the benefits the husband has financially from his wife, and we're going to be learning concurrently the responsibilities that the husband has to his wife, and here begins the discussion. Now, the discussion starts off at a really technical point. Later this morning, we're going to get to the baseline benefits and obligations that a husband has, but we're going to be starting here at a very technical point, and that's going to be the nedunya, the dowry. Okay, father now finds a shidduch for his daughter and is really excited. And they go through that first stage of marriage, which is called Kiddushin. Typically, the ksuva is not written yet. We've made this point already numerous times. The ksuva is written only at the point of Nisuin. And that's when all the obligations kick in, the financial obligations kick in at Nisuin. But still, how excited is he? He found a man for his daughter, a husband for his daughter. He's going to now have a son-in-law. He's so excited. So he promises now a large dowry. And not only does he promise a large dowry, he even writes it down. This is one I'm committing to the marriage, right? I'm going to kickstart the marriage. So I'll throw in a nice number in terms of how much I'm going to be putting into the marriage. And cost of la peros, ksus v'kelim, right? Fruit, clothing, utensils. Shiavoi imami, beis avila, beis bala. And this is what he promises. And let's say he even, not just verbalizes the promise, he even writes it down. So, mesa, now, rachmanas. She dies between erusin and nisuin. And now the husband has been given this promissory note of this is all the things that you're going to be receiving when you marry my daughter. Now, they're already married, first stage of marriage, erusin. Question now becomes the following. Can he now go to his father-in-law, right, who's technically no longer his father-in-law, and said, look, these are all the things you promised, right? In other words, right, it's unfortunate, right? Your daughter died, my wife died, but... In other words, but this was all on paper. And can he collect it? Okay, so, lo zachar haba b'dvar malalu. So the Tanakhama says no. In other words, he can't collect it. And what seems to be the pshat within the Tanakhama is that these are the things that the father promised for this second stage of marriage. In other words, it was conditional. And and Rachmanis, in this particular case, they didn't get to the second stage of marriage. Okay, so the father's not obligated. And Mishum Rabbi Nassan Amru Zacha Habal B'Dvar Malalu. And Rabbi Nassan says no. In other words, it was not conditional. It just simply was, he just simply did not have to actually pay it until the point of Nisuin, but it was not conditional. He's obligated. And according to Rabbi Nassan, the husband can collect. So, Lema
Bepu. Give him the document, the ksuba,
let's say.
To the Baal. So he has nothing in his hand.
Let's say he wrote it down. Let's say, and he's holding on to some sort of document. If you look at Rashi over here, the language of the Gemara is Kasav. And you look at Rashi over here, Kasav la peres ksus v'kelim, pasak la ha'av b'nedunya, shetachnis la ba'ala metatlan kugon peres, v'tolushim v'ksus v'kelim, v'kasvan la mina erusin.
Yeah, but he didn't give it to him.
It sounds like he did. Yeah, but what the Tanakhama will argue is that even though he's holding on to the paper, but all this was conditional. That's what the Tanakhama would argue. And the Gemara now points out that maybe we could fit this into another machlokus that we already know about. And Lema Bepluka de Rebbe Loz ben Azar v'Rabban Kemifligi did none. Nisar Melon Eskarsha, Beyman and Suin, Beyman and Erisin, Go Vesakol. And Rebbe Lazar ben Azarya Omer, Minan and Suin, Go Vesakol, Mina Erisin, Besula, Go Vesam, Vamana Mana. Shalom. Amad Beis, let's just read the words. Shalom Kasavla, Ella Amanas Lakonsa. So I'm going to work backwards. Let's start with Rav Elazar ben Azari. Rav Elazar ben Azari says the following, that that he writes a ksuva to his wife, and he writes it by the time of Erisin. Now again, the ksuva is not going to kick in at Erisin. The ksuva really kicks in at Nisuin. But he writes already at Erisin. Now he writes a base amount, and on top of that, not only does he write a base amount, but he also adds a tosefis. Right, he puts in additional amounts in the ksuva as well. Okay, and at the point of erusin, so he has to pay the ksuva. whatever, Gerushin, death, whatever the case may be, he has to pay already at the point of Erusin. So what does he have to pay? So according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, just the base amount. The Tosefes, even though he wrote it in the Ksuva, that was only conditional to the point of Nisuin. And only at Nisuin is the are those obligations kick in. And the Tanakhama will argue, no, everything kicks in at the time of, when he writes it. So what the Gemara now is suggesting, the Gemara spells it out. So, Laman da'amar lo zakai kareb elazim ben azariah, man da'amar zakai kareb anan. No. So here's what it sounds like. Meaning that if there is any obligations that are made, even if they're made, what you and I would call a little prematurely, but if the obligations were made and written down, so then they become in effect immediately. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama, of the Brice that we just learned, and that would also be, that would be the position of the Tanakhama, the previous Brisa. So, and that would be the position of Rabbi Nassan. And meanwhile, Rav Elazar ben Azariah says no. In other words, the base amount kicks in immediately, but anything additional to that, any Tosefis, does not kick in until the point of Nisuin. And that position, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, is in fact the position of the Chachamim that we recorded earlier. It seems to be a good alignment. The Gemara says not necessarily. Lo. Dekule amaka Rav Elazar ben Azariah, everyone agrees to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that Tosefis does not kick in until Nisuin. But my mandam lo zachek Rav Elazar ben Azariah. To explain the sheet of Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that's easy. But a man d'amr zacha ad kan lo kamer Rav Elazar ben Azariah la midideh li didah. Shelo kasav la amanas lakon sav al midideh li didah. Afil Rav Elazar ben Azariah modeh de mishum ichtunehu v'ha ichtune lahu. Here's a distinction that we can make. When the husband commits himself to a ksuva at Erusin with a base amount and with an additional amount in the husband's mind, which is the umdana, that's what we assume, is that yes, it's true, I'm writing the ksuva now, but I'm not really committing to the actual obligation until we get married, until nisuin, until the second stage of marriage. Okay. And we can all agree. But when the father, and that's when going from him to her, but when going from her to him, now her also means her father as well. But if the father's committing to a nidunya at the point of erusin, his commitment is effective immediately. Why? The language of the Gemara is that now he has a son-in-law. Meaning, right, that's the language of the Gemara, right? The mishum ichtunehu. Chitune means from the word chatan. He's got now a son-in-law. He's so excited that now he has a son-in-law. He's going to show. You know what he's telling everyone? I have a son-in-law. Super excited. And as such, so now, once he makes that commitment and he writes it down, so now, does he have a son-in-law? The answer, of course, is yes. So therefore, it's effective immediately. So the Gemara is now making a distinction. When he makes a commitment to her and it's premature, it's not going to be taking effect until the actual Nisuin. That's what he wrote a conditional to. But when it's go from her to him, or in this case, from the father to him, so he wants it immediately because now he's got a son-in-law. Okay, so where are we right now? So the first discussion that we had in the Gemara regarding financial obligations of husband and wife is that what if a nidunya was written by the father-in-law to the son-in-law at the point of erusin? At what point is it committed immediately, or is it conditional to the nisuin? We have a machlokas and an explanation of the machlokas. Chai ben mazona seha. Okay, he has to feed her. Okay, so here we are now in the Gemara, Mem Zayin Amud Beis, and now we are starting a discussion, going to go well into tomorrow's daf as well, in terms of the basic obligations a husband has to his wife. So he's got a supporter. Supporter over here means food. So Tanu Rabbanan Tikzekin Mazona Seha Tachas Maisi Adam Ukvurasa Tachas Ksuvasa. So the Braisa, as it's first presented to us, now the Braisa is going to need some editing. So I'll read it, I'll translate it, but in terms of understanding it, it's going to take us just a couple of tries. So he has to support her, and it's a rabbinic institution, tachas maisei yadeha, because he's going to be receiving the earnings. As I point out in the beginning of today's daf, a lot of the structure of the ksuva is reciprocal. He's obligated to her, and therefore she's going to be obligated to him, and it's going to be very specific. He's obligated to her to support her, to feed her, and reciprocity for that, he's going to get Maisi Adah. He's going to get her earnings. Kfurasa tachas ksuvasa. He's going to bury her, and that's going to be reciprocal to the ksuva. Presumably what the word ksuva over here means, because obviously That's a very generic term. Over here, it's referring to something specific. Probably it's referring to the dowry over here. Lefichach ba'al ochel peros. And therefore, the husband should go ahead and be able to eat the peros, the dividends. Now, the brisa as it's presented to us, oh boy, it doesn't make sense. Where do the dividends come from? Peros man dekar shmayu. Well, I don't understand. Dividends came out of left field, right? Just mentioned at the end of the brisa, seemingly apropos to nothing. So the Gemara says, fine, chesur mechzur of a hachi katani. Okay, brisa needs to be edited. Let's edit the brisa together. So, takinu mizonos el tachas maisei adah. Okay, so here's how it goes. So, mizonos tachas maisei adah. I'm going to give you a good mnemonic to help us remember, and that's the mems. Okay, the mizonos are maisei adah. He supports her, and he's going to be receiving her earnings. And that's the reciprocal nature of this obligation. That support is coming for earnings. Earnings are coming for support. Later, we're going to talk about which ones came first. Obviously, it's circular, but you know what exactly is the starting point? Well, that will try to clarify a little bit later on. Not today. Pirkana tachas peros. Okay, and here are the pays. Okay, it works out really well in terms of mnemonics. So here are the pays, and that's going to be that he's going to redeem her, and that's going to be tachas peros. In other words, he's receiving her dividends. And in the event that she is taken captive, so now he is financially obligated to redeem her. And that's the reciprocal nature of that, of those two benefits obligations. And finally, kvurasa tachas ksuvasa, and the kvura, and he has an obligation to bury her, a financial obligation to bury her. He's got to pay for all the funeral expenses, and that will be reciprocal to the dowry that he collected at the beginning of the marriage. So lefichach ba'alocha peros, and as a result of that, the husband can go ahead and eat the peros. So my lefichach. So the Gemara says lefichach. Therefore, what do you mean? Therefore, meaning in our edited version of the brisa, this point now seems to be totally obvious. Meaning we are now in our edited version of the brisa, we went over the three benefits and the three reciprocal obligations that he has based on the three benefits. The end of the brisa now, and therefore he eats peros. What do you mean? And therefore, we've established that already. So the Gemara says ma'ud detema mecholo nachlino anuchi nachtino diim kain. So the Gemara says, oh, so maybe we'll say the following. Look, do you know why you get the dividends? You get the dividends because you can ransom me. Because you have to ransom me. I got a great idea. How about this? How about that you don't get the dividends? How about we just simply take the dividends and we put it back in and reinvest them into my properties? How about we do that? So the Gemara says, no. So, the imke nimne velo parik. So, kamash malan deha adifa zimnen delo malu u parik le midide. So the Gemara says, no. The dividends are going to go to the husband, and that is going to be better for her, or it could be better for her. Why? Because how much of the dividends, obviously, depends. I mean, in other words, it depends on how much property she's coming in and how much dividends it's producing. But it could benefit her because once we create this obligation, so we tell the husband, look, I know it's reciprocal, but it's not dollar for dollar. In other words, you are not going to factor and figure out now how much dividends you received over the years. Oh, so in other words, 10 years of marriage, I'm just throwing out numbers. It doesn't really matter what the numbers are. And I got now $1,000 worth of dividends, and now you are taken captive, and they want $2,000 ransom? Okay, so I'll tell you what. Okay, so I'll put up the $1,000. That's how much I got in dividends over the years. The other $1,000, I don't know. You'll figure it out. In other words, no. Once the Chochamim instituted that it's peros tachas pirkuna, so that means now that I get peros, right, whatever the number is, and you will get redeemed whatever the number is. Meaning, so the reciprocal obligations are going to be not capped. And that means to say that I'm going to be obligated to have to redeem you, regardless of what that number is. Because now, it's an uncapped number. So the epochana, so the Gemara says, okay, now that we learned about the reciprocal obligations that exist, so the Gemara says, so why is it that the mems are together and why are the pays are together? And it's not because of the letter. The letter is just a mnemonic. It just helps us remember. But why specifically there? Why is it mizonos, let's say, for example, in exchange for pirkuna? So I said it wrong. Why isn't it maisa yadayim are for pirkuna? Okay, so the Gemara says like this. Amar abay tekinu matzu la matzu v'sheinu matzu l'sheinu matzui. And so the Gemara says because what the Chachamim figured is that we're making a match. We're making a shidduch in terms of benefits, obligations. Okay, mizonos. Okay, so the rumor is that your wife is going to want to eat every single day. Okay, or so they say. Okay, I'm trying to be cute. Okay, so that's obviously a daily requirement. And Maisa Yadayim, her earnings. Okay, so I don't know how often she's going to go to work, but in other words, presumably it's something that's much more common, much more frequent. So we'll take the frequencies and we'll put those together. And now, how many times is she going to be taken captive? Hopefully the number is going to be zero. But in other words, but whatever the number is, it's going to be really close to zero. That's infrequent. And in terms of payros, so I understand if she's coming in with a lot of properties, so there's going to be a lot of payros. But as Rashi comments over here, right, that's not so frequent as well. Right, not often is the wife going to come into the marriage with properties, with lands that are going to be producing dividends. Okay, or in modern terms, how many stock portfolios is a new wife going to come into the marriage where there's going to be dividends coming off of that of those assets? It's not that common. It's not that frequent. So the mems are together because those are common, right? His obligation to support her, his benefit of receiving her earnings. So those are the frequent ones. They're together. And meanwhile, when it comes to the infrequent ones, the peros and the pirkuna, right? The dividends that go from her to him, his obligation to redeem her, those are infrequent. And that's why they're going to be matched and paired together. Okay. In the Gemara's alignment, by the way, of why this against that. So what the Gemara does not mention is the kvura, meaning which obviously is also, it's to say the least, it's infrequent, right? At most, that'll be a one-time expense. And that's tachin nedunya. So the Gemara does not explain why those were matched together. Okay. Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Tomorrow we're going to talk about his obligation to support her. May not be a rabbinic institution, but it may be a din d'oraisa. That's where we're going to be beginning tomorrow. Let's recap our daf today. Okay, in our daf today, we went over and finished up the Mishnah regarding the father's benefits of his daughter, what he is receiving just simply for being the father of this girl. So we went over the various benefits that he receives, the reason why the Chachamim instituted those benefits. We went through each one of them. Notable exception of what the father's not going to be receiving is he's not going to be receiving the dividends. Although, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, what we went through is that this is subject to a Machlokas Tanayim, and we explained the Machlokas Tanayim. Then, on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, we made the big turn. And that is that the benefits that the husband receives from his wife and the obligations, the financial obligations that he has. Our first discussion on this front was if the father is now committing in writing a dowry to his son-in-law, and he actually articulates that which he's giving, and he writes it already at the point of Erisin and Rachmanus. They don't make it to Nisuin. She dies before Nisuin. Is the father obligated? Machlokis Tanayim, and the Gemara's explanation of the Machlokis Tanayim. That takes us to Mem Zayin Amud Beis. On Mem Zayin Amud Beis, we go through the basic requirements a husband has to his wife, financial requirements of supporting her, of redeeming her if she's taken captive, and of bearing her, of paying for those expenses, and that is quid pro quo, and that is going to be reciprocal to the benefits that he's receiving. The mizonos or tachas masi adayim, he's going to support her, and in exchange for that, he's going to be getting all of her earnings. The payros, the dividends that he's receiving, is going to be tachas pirkuna. That's going to be in response, in exchange for his obligation, his financial obligation to ransom her. And finally, the ksuva, meaning the nedunya, the dowry that he receives, so that is going to be in exchange for his obligation to bury her if that requirement comes about. Stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow.